those were three fuguing tunes edited by Lawrence Bennett, and the first one called Northfield by a fellow named, actually blanking on his first name, I should remember, Josiah Ingalls or something like that. Yeah, you remember?
I've drawn a blank as well.
Not sure. I can look it up later if I really want to. And then a couple by anonymous composers, Kanan and Lonsdale. All three performed by Opus 24, a choral ensemble based in Decatur, Illinois, under the direction of Milton Scott, who's been their director virtually since the start of their 20 years in existence. This is their 21st season, and it will begin with their fall concert, annual fall concert, which will be on Tuesday, a week from tomorrow, November the 27th, at St. Paul's Lutheran Church. Indicator with a 7:30 start for that concert. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly, and Milton Scott is my guest for this portion of our program. Thanks, Milt, as always, for coming over.
Thank you. It's always good to be here.
And I always enjoy, I know it's a drive for you, particularly when you multiply it times two, but it's always fun to have somebody in the studio, and we can converse, I think, a little more easily than over the telephone, so I appreciate that, too.
Well, good. It's not a bad drive, and you have great restaurants over here, so.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. You'll have to get your recommendation sometime to find out what a visitor considers to be a great restaurant. I know the ones that I like, and those that I don't, of course, all will remain nameless, since I'm not in the business of endorsing or unendorsing restaurants. But
right.
We've got a lot of nice places to eat, and I'm glad you enjoy them. I have certainly enjoyed over these years of doing this program and having you on here because Decatur Choral Society is lucky to present Opus 24. The recordings you've shared have always been really wonderful sounding. This one came from this past May, which was done at St. Patrick Catholic Church. Is that your most frequent venue, St. Patrick?
Yes, it really is. But it was not available this fall for the date that I needed. So I had to do some serious looking around, you know, and there are so many considerations, acoustics, audience, the ability to host a lot of people. Lighting, things like that. So we are going to be in a new venue this at least for this concert at St. Paul's. St. Paul's is a large church, which is a newly redone back rack warehouse office building, which they've created into an 800-seat sanctuary.
Back rack, which was the former clothing company?
Right.
I mourn the loss of that
store,
by the way.
Well, one of
just as an aside.
One of the owner, manager, founders was in this group as a founding member. So anyway, it'll be different for us. The acoustics are a little drier than the big cathedral, but we've had our first rehearsal over there, and we're making it happen, and I think it's going to be very good.
I wondered in reading the press release if that was a new venue entirely. It sounded like it was. How long ago was it converted to a church, and what kind of process?
It hasn't been open. I don't know if it's even been open a year yet or not, but they spent quite a while on converting it. And as I said, it's quite nice inside, but and it has great, you know, parking and lots of good things for us. I just know that it'll be a little bit different, but we can do some things in there that we haven't been able to do. Some visual things or some screens. Because it's kind of a large venue for some contemporary worship as well. And so we're going to work on doing some visual things with a couple of the pieces.
Do you want to give a preview of any of those?
Well, for instance, I want to talk about the Jackson Berkey thing a little bit later, but one of the pieces is a commission piece called Bleak Midwinter Night, based on the Holst in the Bleak Midwinter. And the piano is it's so much like snowflakes in some places. It's so transparent and beautiful that we're able to put some things on the screens that will kind of give us a mood of how this piece begins, of being in the midwinter. So I think it's going to be quite nice.
Well, our forecast doesn't go out a week from now, but to a week from now. But at least between now and then, it sounds like it'd be not likely to be very wintry.
Not likely, no. We have to create some artificial mood for the Advent Christmas season, I think.
We'll talk about the theme a little bit, if you don't mind. This Shining Night is what you're calling the concert, which implies a Christmas or winter theme of some kind.
Right. When I programmed this, I programmed a piece by Morten Lauritsen called Sure on the Shining Night, which has been done a number of times around the area by various composers as well. But I sometimes, the last 3 years especially, I will take one of the pieces and highlight it as a title for the concert rather than just fall concert or spring concert. So I picked this up, and it really works very nicely. And in my program notes to the audience, I said that the last concert that we did like this was for 9/11, based on Light and Dark. And this is a more optimistic, even a more optimistic section of Light. There are a number of pieces that are directly related to Light.
You said something about Jackson Berkey.
I did. At the end of the concert last spring, one of the board members interrupted the concert or said, wait, we're not going on. And they played a recording and a greeting from Jackson Berkey to the choir.
And remind us who Jackson Berkey is.
Jackson Berkey is the one of the keyboard players for Mannheim Steamroller. Mm. And the behind my back, the board commissioned a piece for my 20th year and for the choir's 20th year. And so he worked on that all summer, and we are premiering it, called Bleak Midwinter Night.
That's the one you were referring to.
Right, and we're couching that in a set of his anniversary carols, which are very cool. They are a new take on familiar carols, as only Jackson Berkey can do. So that's our last set.
I'm just looking through the couple of CDs that you brought over today, and I do see, at least quickly, one arrangement by Jackson Berkey from your May concert.
Right. That's the View Me, Lord, I believe. Is that the one?
I'm looking at one called Hold On.
Oh, Hold On, yes. Actually, that piece is by Philip
Whitehawk.
Yeah. And then, he's a friend of Jackson Berkey, and Jackson Berkey arranged it. I think we played that here not too long ago.
Have we?
But it's always worth hearing. But we did that. That's actually kind of fun because that's with our alumni choir from our last concert. We did have a number of alums come back and sing the last four pieces on the concert in May. So that's a kind of a nice piece as well.
You mind if we share a little bit of it?
No, I think that would be great. That would be great.
I'm going to do a quick cue up here. This is also from the concert this past May. Didn't he come for one of your concerts?
Actually, he's come for two concerts. He came a number of years ago for our rendition of his South Dakota Shadows. And then he contacted us a couple years later and said we had such a good time and a good experience, he'd like to come again, and which he did, and we premiered a number of his pieces, one of which he's actually using in his some of his promotion, his version of Reverie. So we have a nice relationship with him, and we see him when he's in the area with Mannheim Steamroller, and we've done a lot of his music, and it's very, very good and challenging.
Well, sometimes the challenge helps make it very good.
It does.
I mean, if it's beautiful music and it's challenging, it makes it all the more rewarding when you've met the challenge.
The View Me, Lord has just a short, interesting history in that both his mother and his wife's mother died within, I think, days of each other. And the text, View Me, Lord, a work of thine, is very meaningful to him and to his wife, and it's a gorgeous setting.
So this is actually then from last November. November 30th, also in St. Patrick Church, and music by Jackson Berkey here, performed by Opus 24 under the direction of Milton Scott on Live and Local. That's the choral ensemble from Decatur, Opus 24, under the direction of Milton Scott, in a composition by Jackson Berkey with text by Thomas Campion, "View Me, Lord, a Work of Thine," from their concert last fall, I'm sorry, fall of two years ago, 2010, at St. Patrick Church. They are gearing up for this fall's concert a week from tomorrow, Tuesday, November the 27th. It'll be at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Decatur, which is a new venue and a pretty new church. So folks can look forward to exploring that space if you haven't been in it before. And the accompanist for Opus 24 is Beth Creighton, and is also on adjunct faculty at Millikan University in Decatur. So she was the pianist for that. And Milton Scott is with me here on Live and Local this hour. Who was the soloist for that?
The soloist on that one, I believe, was Kathy McCluggage, and she is one of our four or five original members. Mm. So,
out of over 100 singers who have gone through,
I think we said 100. Yes, actually, in the program we've listed our alums and previous singers. Alums are, that's a kind of a nebulous word because it could be somebody who's just been out a semester or been out 10 years. But anyway, there have been about 100 different singers in the group. This concert, I'm singing 39 singers.
Which is, I always thought that's a nice size for a choral ensemble, you know, 10 and a part or so,
yes.
Assuming they're equal. Do you have fairly equal voices?
Fairly equal. I have, for instance, I have 12 sopranos, 10 altos, 7 tenors, 12 bass baritones. So it's fairly balanced.
Yeah. I was going to say some would say the fewer tenors the better. So
well,
in that case you have it balanced well.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
I know I always like to have a few extra basses and, mm-hmm. and altos if I have the option.
I like to build the ensemble from the bottom up. And I have a couple of what I call swing singers. I have a baritone who can sing baritone just as easily as second tenor. So I'll place him and have him share different parts, different songs.
I know you said earlier that some of, I think we were talking about Jackson Berkey's music when you said that it often can be challenging
yes.
for the choir. Do the challenges of, if not necessarily his music, but of some of the music that you have in the program extend to having multiple divisions within parts, meaning you might have, you know, a couple or few soprano parts, a couple or few alto parts and so on, where you divide the chorus up?
Right. The a couple of the carols that he has will divide the sopranos into three parts, or there'll be two parts and a small ensemble doing something. So it's not unusual. And same thing with he'll divide the basses and baritones into three parts. And often the tenors will remain maybe in two, but you can have 10-part music easily with his compositions.
So that means that even though a choir of 40 may sound like a pretty big one, it becomes necessary that all the singers be quite independent
right.
fairly often.
Right, and that sort of determines the seating and the arrangement of how we would perform that piece. I mean, we can take a 4-part choral composition and sing in a mixed in quartets quite easily. I would hesitate to do that in some of Berkey's music.
Elaborate on that a little bit. If you're not a choral singer, you may not know what that means.
Well, I have my choir sings in several arrangements, and I have a standard formation. Choral directors are always moving people out. You know, the definition of a choral director is someone who takes beautiful voices and hides them. So
meaning, I think I know what you mean by that,
so,
because I have done that.
To be facetious, you know. But a standard formation would be have all the sopranos on one side, first two rows maybe, then altos on the next, tenors behind them, basses behind the sopranos. Well, certain pieces are written so that there might be sort of antiphonal. So I'll have all the men on the left in columns and all the women on the right. And then I'll do mixed where they're actually singing in quartets. You could take any row, and that could be a full choir because there could be just quartet, soprano. I'll do soprano, bass, alto, tenor, and
all
then repeat
standing
that.
Next to each other.
Right,
right,
right. And so I can have a different choir. Every row is a choir, and every little column is a choir. But you want to be careful how you do that because not everyone is very secure on every part. And some sound just wonderful like that.
Some pieces.
Brahms, for instance, a Brahms piece would sound wonderful in quartets because this harmony and everything comes from everywhere in the choir rather than a place.
But that also means that your voices need to be pretty independent. Your singers need to be pretty independent.
Right.
To be confident to be able to do that sort of thing.
Right. And I actually have been working on that this morning about putting them in a mixed formation for tomorrow night's rehearsal for just a couple of pieces. Because then, you know, they all hear every part when they're standing in that. They can hear a bass behind them and an alto next to them and a soprano behind them. And that doesn't always happen.
The independence comes because if you're a soprano, you may not have another soprano next to you
right. If
you're inclined to lean on other sopranos.
Right.
So you need to be able to lean on yourself.
You have to be... It does create independence with everybody. And for some, that's good, and for some, it's not as good.
Really scary for
yes,
some.
Yes, very scary.
You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly talking with Milton Scott, who's director of the Choral Ensemble Opus 24 in Decatur. Their fall concert is coming up next Tuesday, not tomorrow, but the following Tuesday. Our program today is made possible with support from The Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta, Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377, open 7 days a week for lunch and dinner. The whole idea of programming at what has gotten to be called almost euphemistically holiday time, but musically speaking, usually means Christmas time with some other sorts of things.
Right. Our concert is always around the Thanksgiving time. It's always a week before the Millikan Vespers, which is totally a Christmas program, and it's awesome. And so I try to do a little transition between the fall and the Advent Christmas season, and I do that with the literature. There are a number of people that said their holiday season musically begins with us and goes through Vespers, and then they're kind of ready to get on with it. And so you look in this program that we're doing a number of Christmas pieces, but we are also doing a number of pieces which we would just call general choral literature. And so that's kind of why I've chosen a little theme about light. Star in the East, Light of a Clear Blue Morning, which is a Dolly Parton song, but arranged by Craig Hella Johnson. There's just a lot of ways that you can go. I have done purely Christmas and other holiday music at that concert. But sometimes that concert was so early, maybe the middle of November, I'm not quite ready for it. The audience isn't quite ready for it. So programming to me is a transitional thing. In the spring, it's not that way. The spring is whatever I want
it to be. It can be whatever you want it to be.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah, not being ready for holiday music. Going into the stores at Halloween and hearing Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is still jarring to me.
Yes, it is. while they're putting up turkeys.
Yeah.
I get very confused.
Well, I assume that this song from the fall concert a couple of years ago called This May Be the Last Time was one of those general
right.
choral
pieces. Sometimes I will choose a piece of music because of someone or some other people that I have in the choir. So this one is a relatively new spiritual. And it has a couple of really good soloists on it. And the baritone, that soloist, is unable to be in our group currently. He's developing his own private music school. And so he's spending some time this year getting that together. Hopefully he will come back. But when you hear him sing, it's just sort of like if your head was down at the concert, it will come up.
Wondering, who is that?
Right. And then the second soloist is a tenor that we have who's been with us a while, and he's excellent as well.
So when you say a new spiritual, I assume you mean a new arrangement of a traditional spiritual.
Well, that's a little hard to say. I think, in my limited memory, that this is a new newly composed spiritual. Now, someone, if there's a caller out there who wants to correct me, because I don't have the music in front, and it has been 2 years since I've performed it. It may be an arrangement, but I think it's fairly newly composed.
Well, you credit an arranger on the recording, Tom okay. Thomas.
Yes. Who's the first name? Is it
Tawn? T-A-W-N.
T-A-W-N. Yes, and who? I do not know anything of this composer except I was fascinated by it, and I knew that I had the soloist to do it.
Well, here is the spiritual called This May Be the Last Time, as arranged by Tawn Thomas and performed by Opus 24 from their concert 2 years ago at St. Patrick Church in Decatur under the direction of my guest today on Live and Local, Milton Scott. This may be the last time, traditional spiritual, which you probably or may have recognized as the spiritual that I know as Wade in the Water. So clearly, Tawn Thomas making use of that tune with a different set of words, performed by Opus 24 under the direction of Milton Scott. And so you mentioned the soloists without mentioning their names. I hear what you mean about the first one. It was really big, arresting voice. Yeah, you were nodding off at that point.
Well,
you'd stop, I think.
That's right. That soloist was Jason Garrett, who is currently not in our group because of other job commitments. And the second soloist is Marcus Brown, who is an administrative assistant or vice president at Richland Community College.
Was the name Jason Garrett is sounding familiar to me. Did he direct one of the other Decatur choral groups?
Yes, he did.
At one point?
For a year, he directed the Greater Decatur Chorale.
That's what it was.
Right.
Because I had talked with him at some point about that, and I remember then I contacted him the next time, and he said, I'm not doing that right now.
Yeah. He's currently working at his own private music school, piano, voice, elementary, doing some things like that.
So. How often do you have either present or past choral conductors in your ensemble? And how does that go?
Well, actually, it goes quite well. I have a lot of music teachers in my choir. A lot of them are elementary. I have a couple of high school directors. And it what is really nice is they all relish the time that they get to simply sing.
It's instead their of time. Be responsible to direct.
Right. It's their time to perform. And it's kind of a release for them. We have a couple of retired ones as well. Someone asked me once, Dick Hoffland was the director at Millikan for many, many years, whom I sang under. And when he retired, he came and sang in my church choir. And someone once asked me, well, how does that work out to have the Millikan choir director in your church choir? I said, well, as long as he has his folder and his music, it works out just fine. You know, we are all choir directors are all somewhat of the same ilk. I don't think they're that threatened by other choir directors singing.
Well, I know when I used to live in Chicago and would sing in different groups myself, mm-hmm. it was not uncommon that there would be other people who direct in those choirs as well. And I always, I think it's generally understood that when you are not directing, you're not directing. So you just sit and sing and
right.
keep your mouth shut. And every once in a while, there would be some person who was a director who didn't follow that protocol, and it wasn't nice. You know?
Well, I have a kind of an open concept because I respect the musicianship, whether it's limited or very advanced in the group. And I say, I can't catch everything in the prep time that I use or the time we have together or the literature I've chosen. And if you think you have an idea for something, tell me, you know. And actually, it's worked quite well. It may have to do with releases of a note or how long we're going to hold this vowel or a different concept. I say, come talk to me because maybe that's just something I haven't thought of and we'll try it. And if we think it works, that's great. So I've never felt threatened by people, you know, that have good music experience in my group. And I think that's worked out well.
Well, and of course, whoever that person may be, if they do have a suggestion, the idea is you hope that they would do it in a diplomatic way. And
that's exactly.
Maybe not in the middle of rehearsal if it's some. On the other hand, you know, I just conducted a concert last Friday with my orchestra called the Prairie Ensemble, and there were a number of times in rehearsals where somebody would say, you know, I think that someone might be playing a wrong note. And which was useful, you know, because I'm trying to listen to everything, but of course can't hear everything. And let's say, for example, one of them came from a cellist who happened to be playing the same line. They could hear they were playing the same line as someone else. And they knew the note they played, and they knew that they heard some other note being played. And it helps the whole ensemble to know that, well, one of them is the right note and one of them is not. And obviously I missed it, or I'd have stopped and fixed it.
I have the same experience. I have someone will raise their hand and say, I don't think all the altos are singing C natural. And I just sometimes go, well, would you point to that person, please? You know, you have to kind of accept the criticism lightly as well. But you're exactly right. You can't possibly, in the time we have, hear everything like, I'm not a Robert Shaw. I tell people when they come in, I'm not a Robert Shaw. I'm not this and this. And then I want to say to them, and you're not a such and such.
Right.
You know? So we have a good working relationship. And we do have a lot of section rehearsals, which helps, you know, to narrow down some things like that.
And even if you are Robert Shaw, I hope nobody minds if I share this story. Several years ago, I used to take private conducting lessons with Ken Kiesler, who used to direct the Illinois Symphony. And he came to me one time where he had been somewhere, and he was horribly depressed because he had been to some rehearsal that Pierre Boulez was conducting, I think, with Chicago Symphony. And Pierre Boulez is, you know, supposed to have the ear of all ears. And Ken heard places that Boulez had not heard an error. And he was very depressed because if this guy didn't hear it, the rest of us are doomed.
You know? That's right. And how do you raise your hand and say, excuse me, Mr. Boulez?
Well, you don't from the back of the hall.
That's right. You just know it.
Right.
Right. And that's a learning experience as well. Then you just hope that your choir hears well enough and that you've trained them well enough and that they trust you enough that they can tell you that, you know, we're just not getting this, or could we stop and get this?
Right, because as a director, you're paying attention to whatever you think is important at that moment.
Right.
And you hope that what you are paying attention to will be the most important thing to make sure the performance is the best it can be.
That's exactly it.
There's a piece that I know we wanted to play from your most recent concert, which was this past May, by someone named Eliza Gilkison, called A Requiem.
Right. When my wife and I heard the group that sang this, the group is called Conspirare. It's a professional choir, and the director's Craig Hella Johnson. And we heard them in at a convention at Fort Wayne, and we were so taken with them that we skipped the next section and heard them in a night concert. And one of the pieces they did was this Requiem, and the text is dedicated to all those who have been victims, recent victims especially, of natural disasters and the tsunami. And it's a prayer to Mother Mary. And so it has certain inferences, but some of the texts are just wonderful. You know, fill our cup to overflowing, bless us all, help us find loved ones, etc. And it's just a very wonderful text, not difficult musically. I mean, you know, rhythmically or pitch-wise or anything. It just seems to fit together very well. So we chose to do it and are glad we did.
An arrangement by Craig Hella Johnson of Eliza Gilkison's piece called Requiem, performed by Opus 24 under the direction of Milton Scott, this past May 6th at St. Patrick Catholic Church in Decatur. They're giving their next concert a week from tomorrow at on the 27th of November, Tuesday, 7:30 at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Decatur. And you're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Thank you.
That's music by Eliza Gilkison, as arranged by Craig Hella Johnson. Her Requiem, as performed by Opus 24 under the direction of Milton Scott with pianist Beth Creighton, from their concert in Decatur this past May. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our broadcast today is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, preserving our nation's musical heritage at the University of Illinois. Now featuring new exhibits entitled America's Musical Past, Shenanigans, Hootenannies, and Other Twisted Adventures. More information is available at sousaarchives.org. Milton Scott is my guest this hour on Live and Local, and always glad to have him on the program. We were sort of debating just now as we were listening to that beautiful piece, whether to play the piece we are in fact going to play next. It's a little longer than the others have been, and has it's got some drama behind the meaning of it. Coincidental right. drama, in part.
Right. This is called The Dream Isaiah Saw, and the text is by Tom Troger, who is actually a theologian and teacher. And so he wrote this text before 9/11 even happened, but it's just perfect.
You said shortly before.
Shortly before, right. As if there was a premonition, but it just has a wonderful feeling of all the systems of nature and the will of God and all of the things all coming together, and how the nations will join in being one after systems, what he calls systems of life, crumble like buildings. And it's when you hear it, you can't do anything but compare it to that. And then he has this wonderful refrain about little child in bed of straw, make my heart your new dwelling. And he brings us back, and it just builds and builds to this great ending with the brass and six tuned tam-tams, the Yamaha drums and organ and piano.
Did he write the piece with the Christmas time in mind?
Well, he only did the words. And I think, yes, I'm sure he did have something in mind for this child of God coming in and dwelling in our hearts and changing the world. That is not the composer of the piece, but he had some kind of coordination with him.
And who's the composer of the piece?
Well, you know, I think it might be on the CD.
Rudolph is the last name. That's what's given.
Glenn Rudolph.
Glenn Rudolph.
Glenn Rudolph, yes.
And a text by Tom Troger. Another performance by Opus 24. This comes from the concert 2 years ago, the fall concert 2 years ago. The Dream Isaiah Saw, with brass, organ, piano, percussion, all involved in this performance. Sit back and listen a while. It's Live and Local.
Thank you.
The applause for the dramatic concert ender from two Novembers ago in Decatur at St. Patrick Church there of the Opus 24 fall concert under the direction of Milton Scott with, you would think, a cast of thousands, but however big the choir was on that occasion, plus various brass players and organ and piano and percussion on that particular occasion. Their fall concert this year is happening a week from tomorrow, Tuesday, November the 27th at 7:30 at St. Paul's Lutheran Church on One Bacharach Court. That building, formerly offices, corporate offices for Bacharach, has become a church. Of course, it's in Decatur as well. And Milton Scott's my guest this hour here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Milt, what kind of instrumental participation do you have on this concert?
Well, we have a small percussion ensemble for the Carly Simon piece, Let the River Run. It's a very, very cool piece. Plus, we have some percussion on the Jackson Berkey pieces, which make them sound like Renaissance or even Middle Age kind of things with finger cymbals and string bass and deep percussion on a couple of his anniversary carols on God Rest You Merry Gentlemen. And then we'll have a French horn on one of the pieces on the Light of a Clear Blue Morning. So
you mentioned Carly Simon earlier. You mentioned Dolly Parton, and I know you've got a song written by the Carpenters, presumably Richard Carpenter,
right?
With
Crescent
Karen
Noon
from many years ago. Is it common that you have, for want of a better term, various pop tunes arranged for choir on your program?
It happens often. I mean, I've even done some vocal jazz kind of things, an arrangement of Over the Rainbow or something like that. It's kind of fun for the choir to experience. It doesn't always have to be super heavy. These particular arrangements, the Carly Simon and Dolly Parton, are by Craig Hella Johnson. And if he does them on a tour, I know that they're worth doing. Mm-hmm. And they are really, they weren't necessarily easy, The Light of the Clear Blue Morning, but that they're just great choral pieces to sing, and the audience, I think, will like them a lot.
As it happens, most of what we played today has been sort of slower songs, but you do mix it up.
Right, Let the River Run is what we're ending the second section with, and it really goes. Our first number, Praise Ye the Lord by Randall Thompson, is up. The Svelink Hodie, which is a very standard Christmas piece for most choirs, is up.
Now, when you say up, you mean up-tempo, faster, yeah.
And the anniversary carols are very energetic. I think as people leave the concert, they will be energized and they'll be humming something, you know, from that concert.
Well, you hope different people will hum different tunes, because that means that you've
captured
people.
They'll probably all do it at the same time. Actually. Very confusing.
Your own Tower of Babel or Sound of Babel going on there at the end of a concert,
yeah,
I guess. But the sort of that you might like, because
I would.
People singing.
I would.
Before we go out with one more song from Opus 24, let me mention some other events that you can go see in our live, here live in our listening area over the next few days. Tonight, it's the weekly Hootenanny at Rose Bowl Tavern in downtown Urbana. That starts at 8 o'clock. If you have any of a number of types of old-time music that you'd like even to sing yourself, you can get in line and participate in that. Tomorrow night, the Traditional Jazz Orchestra is at Bouvon's in Urbana. They're also going to be participating in a concert on Wednesday night at the Iron Post in Urbana at 5 o'clock to benefit the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, along with the Almost A Quartet and the Impalas. I've jumped ahead to Wednesday now. That'll be at 5 o'clock on Wednesday. Jumping back to Tuesday, the Parkland Early Jazz Ensemble will be at the Iron Post at 7 o'clock. At Clark Bar in Champaign, it's Mark Laughlin, John Coppice, and William Dicker. That's at 6:30 tomorrow evening, a number of singer-songwriters involved there. At Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield, West Side Story has one performance only Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. And it's the Traditional Irish Music Session Wednesdays at Dublin O'Neill's in downtown Champaign. That is at 8:30. Jammin' Jimmy Bean and Friends, an acoustic experience, will be at Bentley's Pub in Champaign Wednesday night at 6 o'clock. The Diva and the Dude are at Clark Bar in Champaign Wednesday night at 6:30. Those are some of the things going on in our listening area that we happen to have in our calendar, and I'm sure there's some things that we don't have on our calendar. Our broadcast on Live and Local is made possible with support from Sweeney Brothers Carpet and Rug Gallery of Bloomington, featuring in-plant area rug cleaning using the master rug cleaning method. Sweeney Brothers at 11 Westport Court on Bloomington's east side, where the beauty of a room starts with the floor. You've been listening to Live and Local on 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana, with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR, classical music, and more for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, it's All Things Considered from NPR. That's at 5 o'clock. And we'll be back with another show, of course, for you tomorrow at 4 o'clock. I'm Kevin Kelly, and want to say thanks very much to Milt Scott, director of Opus 24, for joining us as he does, I guess, about twice a year.
Right. It's always my pleasure. Thank you.
And it's great to hear so much of your music on the program today. Opus 24 spring, fall choral concert is going to be on November the 27th at 7:30. And hope that some of you can get to that. They always have a great turnout and do some wonderful things, including this tune from the fall concert of 2010. It's Edwin Fissinger's arrangement of the Christmas Carol, I Saw Three Ships, Opus 24, directed by Milton Scott. Thanks for joining us on Live and Local.
I saw three ships.